Right, this is the Cool Shit Podcast. Each week we round up the latest cool shit, helping us think different and keep inspired. What makes it in, what gets left out, and what gets challenged. Is it cool, is it shit?
Or does it cross the magic threshold and come bona fide, certified cool shit?
Welcome to the editors meeting.
Welcome to episode 61 of the Cool Shit Podcast. I'm not Gareth, I'm Gina, and I'll be replacing Mr. Loud today. It's an exciting one today because we've got our newest member of the Zach team and her first podcast. It's Steph.
Hi, everyone.
How are you?
Good. Very nervous.
I was going to say, how are you feeling? Have you ever recorded a podcast before?
No, just voice notes to my friends.
Yeah, you did say that to me earlier. That's your experience in the podcast
8 minutes
world.
8 minutes straight. So someone's actually going to reply to me, which is good.
I actually think you...
an 8 minute voice note?
I know.
Oh, we wouldn't be friends
anymore.
It's
such a girly thing to do, though, isn't it?
No, but it's one of those like long distance friendship and girls natter too much. So I have to write notes of like what she said and reply to that.
Couldn't you just call her?
No.
We've got busy lives.
You've got to get your piece out. They might interrupt.
Yeah, so welcome, Steph, and welcome to Zach.
Thank you.
And we've got James.
The oldest member.
The oldest member. Actually, Matt would be the oldest member.
Outside of partners, I think might be longest serving now.
Yeah, I think so.
And you just heard Matt as well.
Hello.
Matt's back.
I'm back.
Matt is back and better.
A third, fourth?
At least, yeah.
At least.
And they're always very fruitful when you're on here.
Make them special.
And a founding member who was meant to be on every week and for whatever reason just didn't pan out that way.
got booted off.
Got booted off pretty early. You were the Pete Best of the Cool Shit
Podcast. I'd like to say I just gave other people the chance to talk.
To thrive on the Cool Shit Podcast.
I'm so giving.
It's Ringo over here. Yeah.
Back to the editor-in-chief of the Cool Shit Podcast. James, what's our hot topic that we're starting off with?
You want a hot topic?
I want a hot topic.
Right, okay. This Las Vegas sphere, I assume we've all seen it.
Yep.
I don't necessarily have a point of view on this. I want to put it out to the group. Is it cool? Is it shit? Is it kind of a gimmicky, temporary thing? Or is this potentially going to be like the future of live entertainment? What were your initial reactions when you saw it?
Is it all of those?
Or is it all of the above?
Yeah. Or has James not prepped and he's asking us a question? Because he doesn't have a clue.
I haven't prepped. Our 3 hour meeting over ran.
Matt, go on, initial thoughts.
There's a mad backstory to it. And I haven't like kind of genned up on it, but I just know that there's a mad backstory of like investment and all the rest of it. There's a mad story about how much power it consumes. Like it's fucking off the charts.
That's not very sustainable. Yeah.
No, exactly. But unless it's getting its power from some huge solar array out in the desert, which it should
make sense to be fair. They probably should be doing that.
Or the outside of it, you know, if there was a way to make solar panels LED. But anyway, I think it's fucking mad, but genius, but will very quickly become cringe. Depending on how it's deployed. Like, U2 as the opening act.
Yeah. I had questions
it's
about
like the
that
pod,
as well.
Do you remember getting your first iPod? And it's like U2's album.
Oh my God, on Apple
That's true, actually. They're invasive into our lives and culture constantly.
I thought it would either be them or fucking Coldplay, right? Because they did all those Twitter bands and all of that sort of stuff. But I don't know, launching it with, like, the visuals looked amazing.
Yeah.
But, like, launching it with U2, come on.
What is meant to be the point of it? Because is it not slightly, if you go to like a gig, does it slightly kind of take away from it? Like I can imagine being an artist and thinking, well, I don't want people looking all about the place here.
So that's what U2's creative director said, apparently, reading up on it. He was like, I'm not doing it. We're not doing it. It's not about the band then, it's about the visuals.
And then he said, how much? Sure.
Yeah, exactly. But how different is it from when Travis did Fortnite? And everyone went, is that the future of gigs? Like that we all meet there virtually and we, you know.
But I think that was for a certain like age group.
Yeah, but so is this, isn't it?
This, I don't think
so. It's for
so.
Rich
this...
people who can afford tickets to
again,
Vegas events.
I think it still spans, because they want to open one in Stratford.
Yeah, I saw that.
Which is just so random.
Well, apparently like the plans are already like in place because they've got a load of signatures against it.
Yeah,
there's the NIMBYs who don't want it.
Wow.
Yeah, but I guess it's all about like redefining experiences, isn't it? So like immersive experiences were like really in at one point. And I feel like we even got a bit sick of them because we would go to them for culture club.
Oh, they're shit, the art ones.
Yeah, they're a bit too samey now.
I was thinking about that like Yayo Kusama one. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of people like visually, when people take pictures of it, put it on Instagram, looks sick. But then when you go in there, the illusion kind of loses its thing. Mm-hmm. So it's like, is it that? Or do we really have to really get in the sphere and like experience it and be like, oh, okay, yeah, this is cool.
But I think that's the point. It feels like now, a lot of the time people are kind of cultivating experiences for the sake of an Instagram mm-hmm. story, like yeah. create, like I'd imagine that's part of the conversation, is like, how can we get the most eyes on this possible if we create something that's so inherently Instagrammable because of like the novelty of it, then that's just going to make it spread.
Is that a bad thing? Like, we talked about this a few episodes ago about that hyper physical reality that all the luxury brands are doing with Pop-Up, Bottega Veneta, Jacquemus, all of those sort of things, yeah. and they're basically just creating Instagrammable moments.
Yeah.
Is that what this is? Just a PRable, Instagrammable.
But then that feels quite transient, which is kind of my point, that I'm not sure this is a long-term thing. But the difference between this and the Fortnite thing of whether that was the future of entertainment is, I imagine there's a chasm in terms of the difference in the investment in the actual infrastructure, because they've actually built a thing here, whereas with Fortnite that already existed, and when it sort of didn't take off, didn't become a thing, it just goes back to being Fortnite. It's kind of, I assume they haven't really lost anything there.
I don't know. Is it a risky investment? It cost like $2 billion, more than
$2 billion. Yeah. Who paid for it?
It was
BlackRock.
No, probably. Yeah, probably they own 5% of it. Yeah. No, it was some crazy investor dude who's gone bankrupt and like failed, and entrepreneurial sort of, you know, story and all the rest of it. But apparently he's a bit of a maverick. I need to regen up on the story, but it has a bit of a checkered backstory about starting to get off the ground and then not making it and then running out of cash and all of this sort of stuff. But by sheer will, apparently this guy has got it over the line. And it's got like speakers in every seat. It's got all of those screens inside, outside.
I think it's like the biggest LED
screen. That makes sense.
Inside and outside, right?
Yeah.
Which is also annoying for people. Again, I understand why people are signing petitions, because imagine you live near there.
Yeah.
But is it any different to the rest of Vegas, though?
Or just bright light. Big bright lights, big shiny.
Like gaudy and bright.
Yeah. Talking about the poor people in East London. But James, you're saying, you're talking about the future of live music.
Yeah, because I'm going to use my favourite word. Like, does it kind of calcify the bifurcation between the kind of like the big name top acts, the potentially slightly kind of cheesy ones who will always sell out arenas like U2, but then even like, I guess, sort of Taylor Swift, the big names. If in live entertainment you need an element of like immersive experience, then all of a sudden the kind of the top end of live music has very little in common with people performing mm-hmm. in pubs and whatever, whereas previously it was just kind of a bigger version of that.
I don't know, I think like U2, I don't know when the last released a new fucking album, I've no idea, right? But they're playing songs that are 40 years old. So do you need to augment it or refresh it, whatever you want to call it, with brand new visuals, right? Versus a band playing in a pub, probably playing music that you, unless you're like a fan that follows them around, you might not have heard before. Different experience, different occasion. And then you get to like that festival stage where they're playing the album that they've released and they're touring it, and festivals, and maybe playing a few kind of classic hits and stuff. And then you get to U2 stage, which is fucking rock establishment, right? So it's like, we need a little bit of Viagra to kind of, you know, get the juices flowing into our songs again. I feel like it is the visual equivalent of Viagra for U2's music for aging rock stars.
That's a mental image. I didn't need to take, or
like a shitload of coke and a load of mushrooms, like for the Beatles, and you're in some hallucinogenic experience.
And Viagra.
Yeah. Exactly. In a horny hallucinogenic experience.
A cocktail, yeah.
Wait, so you can't imagine, I guess, artists that are really big right now using something like this.
Killers will do it in,
but
the next
again, that's
years.
Like they're kind of naff, aren't they?
That's
like,
what I mean.
You'd imagine like anyone with a bit of kind of,
yeah,
I don't know, credibility would. It would. I feel like the cool move here is to say, "Fuck that! I don't want to do that."
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
because it's, I imagine the tickets are going to be even more inflated than they already are. Like I feel like this kind of opens up a bit of an opportunity for some artists to be a little bit kind of anti-establishment by like turning this down,
depending on how popular it gets.
Are they even going to get offered? Who's exactly. anti-establishment, right? There's Travis Scott anti-establishment, because then he went and did Fortnite, which is like a massive kiddie platform. No. Do you know what I mean? Like who's going to get offered it and turn it down? They're
Ed
only going to offer it to Ed Sheeran. Wouldn't turn it down, would he?
I don't know him.
Hasn't he done like fucking butter adverts or something like True. That? Do you know what I mean? I feel like when you get to that period of your career when you're massive, yeah. Taylor Swift will do it.
That's kind of what
I'll go.
Level,
I love yeah. Taylor Swift. I'm such a secret Swiftie. Steph, do you think you would want to go to something like this? Or is it going to be a case of, you know, you go to like one immersive
That's
art experience?
That's what I was going to say. If it's like a one, you go
It's a
once.
One-time thing yeah. to yeah, say you've gone? Or?
No, because it's yeah. the whole point of that is that the visuals change with every band, right? The creative director just turns that into a whole new different experience every time. It's not going to play the same deserty fucking Joshua Tree landscape when
Yeah, but why is it deserty?
Taylor Swift goes there.
Why is it deserty? It just kind of goes back to that thing. It's like we're all like glued to a screen. It's like, why are you showing me desert? I can just go outside.
Because
and
they were
desert.
No, because they, yeah, they were yeah. playing a song from the Joshua Tree album, which was recorded in a studio out in the desert.
And Vegas is in a desert. There's yeah. actually quite a lot of desert involved.
Yeah. To be fair. Yeah, but they should have just done it outside. It's also desert.
That's true. It's yeah, I go with that. Yeah.
It's like you're in a desert. You are.
You are yeah. in a desert.
But
you're
it's
inside.
Also, I feel like it's going to be quite a big threat to just normal traditional like concerts that are hosted in, you know, normal stadiums, right? So like the O2 and Wembley and stuff.
I yeah, but who has that budget other than the top 1% of artists, really?
Yeah, but yeah. even to play in somewhere like Wembley, no?
I don't know. To be honest, it looks, the videos that I've seen, I get that it's very impressive visually, but it looked like quite a, if you didn't have that, you'd take that. No, it looked like quite a lame event to be at.
Oh,
like,
did
it's
it?
Just a load of people with their phones filming and stuff. Like, it doesn't feel like a music event, but maybe it's that's like the point that it's not. It's kind of somewhere in between live music and like an artistic kind of creative immersive
experience. A lot of DJs do that though. A lot of big tech events,
I hate that. Printworks.
Yeah, yeah.
So awful. It's just a bunch of kids with a
Dead Mouse when he played outside that building on South Bank, was it, or something like that? And you know, that was just loads of people holding phones up to see the visuals.
I guess
visuals.
It's almost encouraging that a little bit. You're not. Are you actually seeing?
Well,
the
just leaning into it.
Or,
yeah, you might as well. Yeah. If you can't beat them, join them. Like, give them something to video.
Yeah, confiscate their phones or chop off their hands.
So no one likes the sphere, then. That's what I'm getting
Matt seems
from this.
To like it.
I'm ambivalent to it. I appreciate its kind of creative endeavour, but I wouldn't go and see U2 in it.
And on that note, James, what else you got for us?
It's kind of related because we're talking about sort of the gap between, I guess, well, so, some musicians. In this case, there's like an indie band and kind of the big name musicians. In this case, Easy Life, who are like a sort of like pop kind of indie group, they've had to change their name because EasyJet have threatened them with a lawsuit because of the similarity of the name. I bought this in particular because I wanted to get your take on this because I can't tell if I'm just a bushy-tailed, bright-eyed idealist, but this just seems like...
You're not.
Nothing bushy about your tail.
But it just... I struggle to see any way in which it isn't a colossal own goal PR-wise, even if maybe technically they might be in the right in the eyes of the law, they can get away with this because of trademarks or whatever. Like, how is this good for EasyJet?
There's background to this story, right? There's Easy Life is a brand that's been around for years, right? But they were trading without Easy Company's thing. And it's a magazine of like products for old people to make their lives easy. So it's, I don't know, it's things to help you get in and out of the bath, things to open fucking jars of pickled onions, whatever, right? So that had been going for a while. And then Stelios and his mates piled in, but they did it on the quiet. And what happens now is Easy Life, which is been around for ages, now pays Easy Company the license, right? So there's background to Easy Life. And they now have on the masthead of their magazine, which goes out to pensioners up and down the country, about the company, the Stelios company, all the rest of it, even though they're technically nothing to do with it. They're just licensing the name Easy Life off them. People are like, all right, so there is a way to figure these things out and sort them out in a friendly manner where everybody sort of wins from it. Easy Life, the band, has been around for 8 years using that thing. Easy Life, the new brand that had been sort of re-registered, all the rest of it, has been around for 1 year.
Yeah, that was the thing in the old school, that they were around for 7 years previously and that it wasn't seen as an issue.
And they've gone in really heavy-handed. But when you read into the sort of the legals of it, and I agree they've been heavy-handed, so it's a massive own goal straight off the bat. But like, who likes EasyJet anyway? No one fucking likes EasyJet. It's a distressed purchase.
I'm a Ryanair man myself.
Well, that's another distressed purchase. It's distressing to purchase it. Yeah. What they were saying is that because they used the livery and they used an image of a jet on their promotional posters, the band posters, all the rest of it, they're basically trading off the Easy Company's branding. Not forget Easy
Life. Or the goodwill that people have towards EasyJet.
Well, there isn't any of that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
There's a bit of irony in there, isn't there? So I think legally they didn't have a case to stand on. So if anyone's going to take them to court legally, you've got no leg to stand on.
Sorry, who didn't have a case?
Easy Life, the band.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. I think technically, which is what they've said, why they've kind of given in before it
starts. It's the image, not the word.
It'll ruin them financially because even if they win, like lawyers cost an awful lot of money. Yeah, totally. And if they lose, then they're completely fucked.
But I think the thing is that it's the image, not the word, right, that they were getting themselves into trouble with. Had they not put a jet with an Easy Life logo on it that was orange orange and white on their posters for a concert or for a fucking album launch or something, I think they'd have been all right.
Have they changed their name then?
Yeah, they've got to.
But they're going to. What? They're playing two more gigs as Easy Life, but now they're gonna change their name.
This is a bit of like publicity for them though. People are probably gonna be Googling them and like wanting to wonder what they're
doing. I'll tell you what's funny, what this made me think of was, you know, it was a few months ago when we had a pitch and we were looking at kind of like bait and switch. And I thought this would be like, if they were actually doing this, it'd be a great example of that, to get people outraged at EasyJet and then say, oh, we're only having a laugh, like we're actually on side, and it builds both of them. But they're not doing that.
No, they're not. They're just being twats.
Yeah, and they called them brand thieves, which is just like, I don't know, that doesn't strike me as a great way to win over Gen Z consumers, is to trash.
No, but I don't think Gen Z consumers buy into the EasyJet.
No, you buy it because it's the cheapest one.
Exactly. Yeah. So not I don't think they're worried about
that. So they don't care. Maybe that's actually what makes it easy for them to do this, because they don't have much brand affinity. They've got a lot of brand recognition, but not a lot of brand love.
Yeah, exactly. They've got like their equity shit. But also, they are brand thieves because they've been using the image of EasyJet and planes and all the rest of it. So they are.
Yeah, and
you could say they're borrowing it, but you know, one way or another, they've used it in a way that promotes their band using someone else's brand equity.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because like, that's like, it was a pretty minor thing. Like, they probably didn't gain that much from that. And it was probably just like, oh, this would be funny, wouldn't it? Like, you'd imagine they're absolutely ruining that now, because it's just like a little joke for the sake of a few posters, a few t-shirts, and now they've got to change the name because
bit of irony.
Although, I don't know if Easy Life, the band, come out any worse off because of this, because now I feel like they've almost mastered themselves and like a load of people are going to get behind them. And also, I used to listen to them, and now that they're kind of in the news, I'm like, oh yeah, I quite liked a few songs. Exactly. And then you go back and end up listening to them. So
there was I think it might have been Finisterre who got shitloads of letters from Levi's because they had a tab on their jeans that they made that was a red tab from similar to the Levi's, right? And they turned the letters that they got from Levi's, the cease and desist letters, into a great little marketing campaign. Right. Like, big guy bullying little guy. Mm. We're sustainable, we're local, we're kind of creating jobs. And it platformed that brand like you wouldn't believe. I think the same thing will happen is loads of people will go and see Easy Life or buy their music or be interested in their music and all the rest of it. It's whether they can capitalize on it. What's the next band? What are they going to call themselves next?
Hard Life.
Ryan Hare or something like
that. That's quite good.
Look, he's thinking of another one. Look.
I've got British Airwaves.
Let's go to you, Steph. It's your first podcast. This is the first story you're bringing. No pressure. A bit of pressure.
So my story, because we obviously were talking about the Sphere and everything. It's a kind of immersive experience. I thought I'd bring in Pinterest, creating this like pop-up called Possibility Place.
Where's London. That? In London.
It's in London, Covent Garden, isn't it? And it's done by Amplify, the big experiential agency. I mean, it's all about bringing in kind of all the Pinterest inspiration that you would have into the real world. And it's like a two-day
shot. Full of like, I don't know, fucking candles and bad
it's
home
like
decor.
Beauty, food and home inspo. But that's exactly what you find on the platform.
This is right,
so that's what
street.
I mean, yeah. So they're bringing that to like life, the digital to life.
Which I think is wicked.
I think it is, like, theoretically. But my issue is, after the event, are people actually going to go home and like, oh, you know what? I'm inspired now. I'm going
to
do this.
I need a Pinstagram account.
Yeah.
To suffer there and suffer.
Yeah, or like, you know, I was like, you know what? I'm going to paddle my wall now after seeing that. Mm. Or like being to that event. I'm going to make those mocktails.
I understand what you're saying. It's all about, but like they've even said that it's all about unlocking the magic of everyday inspiration. It is fluffy. It is fluffy, but I do feel like the target market that Pinterest already have, this is going to be perfect.
Sounds like it's like white girls in suede boots over the knee.
Swifties.
Swifties, you know, and people who do vision boards of what their future house is going to be like. And it's
manifesting
but
board.
But that's fair enough, though. That's fair.
Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah, I guess it's got a certain demographic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That they're attracting.
And Pinterest campaigns are always quite like nice, like some of their adverts. I've always been quite a fan.
Recently partnered with IKEA and stuff, so like you can click on the items that they've used and you can direct you to IKEA, which I think is quite cool. But if they did that in real life, I think, compared to this,
but this isn't just a standalone campaign though, it's part of a wider campaign. So I think that's also important to note, right? Because this could be one part of a bigger thing, which is actually
what's the bigger
good.
Thing doing? So I feel like this is still kind of lost on me.
So they're kind of trying to help people from dreaming to doing.
Right, okay, I get it. Okay. Right.
What's in it for Pinterest?
Oh,
I know what's in it for Pinterest. What? Is that you start to use their advertising and the commerce, so you're starting to actually bring the ads that they serve you into kind of products that come into your home, right? You're going to actually make some purchases through it.
Although can you buy from Pinterest? It's not like Etsy, is it?
Yeah, no, you can click through to the links.
Yeah, they click.
So it's probably going to have just redirected sellers and stuff, right?
Yeah, they're partnering with brands, but I don't know if there's actually specific brands that are included within this. I think that would be cool, actually.
I think that would give you some breadth to that activation, right? I'm a heavy Pinterest user. I've got like fucking shitloads of boards because I just use it to collect ideas, you know, for art direction, visual direction, stuff like that. Then there'll be loads of people who are doing it for vision boards for their house and people use it for Fitspo and all of that sort of stuff, right? So I feel like if they started to go, actually, I'm going to do one in, I don't know, fucking Dalston for people who are like in the creative community and it's kind of heavy on sort of fashion or whatever. And then you do one in like, I don't know, West London for fucking boho chic or something. You know what I mean? You start to take it into different places, different communities, and you start to tune the idea a bit. Mm-hmm. Feels like if they've just done one.
Yeah, it's very generalised.
A little bit middle of the road.
If there's a little bit of kind of vanilla and almost kind of twee. Like, I'm just kind of like just looking through the page. It's pretty humourless. And like compared to say like IKEA, where they actually do kind of inject some humour, like, it just looks quite dry to me, but I don't know. I'm probably not the target audience.
Well,
though,
evidently not for this, but it feels like you're almost reinforcing that middle range kind of meh of the platform. And actually, it's really powerful for other stuff and cooler stuff and more inspiring stuff.
Yeah, it's weird. It seems like they've leaned into a stereotype of a type of person that people find annoying and don't want to talk to.
Live, laugh, love.
So, very
live, laugh, love. Yeah, exactly. Nice try, Pinterest. Back to the drawing board.
Or the pinboard.
Yeah.
Pinterest, again, if you're listening.
There we go.
Yeah.
Reach out to Zach. We'll help you next time.
And sorry about all the stuff we just said.
Last but not least, Matt.
I got one.
You got a story?
I got a story.
Okay.
I think it's a really smart bit of marketing. So, Jordan 1's... Everyone loves a Jordan 1. Everyone loves a Jordan 1 low at the moment. Everyone loves a Travis Scott Jordan 1.
Yeah.
Mm.
Does everyone love a Travis Scott Jordan 1 golf shoe?
Golf?
Who plays golf?
Dom.
Dom does, and Dom wears Travis Scott's.
And he wears... Yeah, oh yeah, he does.
Exactly. So this was a story to kind of like...
Oh, that would have been perfect for him.
I know, but he's not here. But anyway, it's still a good story, right? So we're all now familiar with ballots to get certain sneakers, right? Or, you know, apparel or whatever. And Jordan 1 Low Travis Scott is going to ballot on certain retailers. And obviously, some people go and buy their golf shoes from a golf retailer, right?
Mm.
This golf retailer has said you can only have a pair of Jordan 1 Low Travis Scott's if you can hit a golf ball 200 yards.
Okay. Who's the golf retailer? Is it like a well-known one? Or?
Well, I don't really particularly know them. It's called Pitch. It's like a members area in Pitch. And I presume they've got an indoor, you know, driving range type of thing,
okay,
I guess. But it's to stop the reseller market, which you kind of think is half smart and half not smart, because if you're reselling golf shoes, you're probably interested in golf to a certain extent and can probably hit a ball.
But I'm sure most people can hit a ball. I could probably go.
No,
you could not.
It's quite hard. Thanks, I went to a driving range and
Wait,
you know, if
you get two attempts, you get two attempts to hit a golf ball 200 yards.
So only like professional golfers could probably, not professional.
No, I could pop timers.
Again, thank you. I'm actually quite good at it.
All right, challenge on.
Maybe we'll do that.
Next social. We're going to an indoor driving range and Gina's going to hit a ball within her first two shots.
And then you can buy a pair of Jordan
1s. I'll buy a pair of Jordan 1s.
Travis Scott one.
It won't be the Travis Scott's, but you know.
That's fine.
I genuinely don't think you'll even hit the ball.
Yeah. Thank you, James. I work with really kind people. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
There we go.
Right then.
Not that bad. Okay. When you think of these trainers, you don't think of people that play golf, do you? So is this the point?
They've been doing that for a while, right? Okay. Phil Mickelson, who's like this sort of 50-year-old golfer, wouldn't necessarily associate
him. He's a weird bloke as well.
Yeah.
Big gambling addict, I've been told. Yeah.
And he wore some and, you know, fine. But like golf is, I wouldn't say it's becoming cool again, but the brands are focusing on it again.
Mm-hmm.
There was a load of heat around the Saudi Arabian kind of buying up a load of golfers and whatever. But Puma are going heavy on golf. Yeah. Nike with a Jordan 1 silhouette are going heavy on golf. So golf is becoming a bit of a thing. But the fact that this golf store has capitalized on that and went, all right, then come down. And this story has found its way into like Hypebeast and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. I think it's like a masterful little piece of marketing activation from them that's leveraging a massive wannabe kind of a must-have shoe. Like Travis Scott golf shoe, if you're into golf and you're of a certain demographic, you're going to be like, I want that shoe.
Yeah.
But would they be a Travis Scott fan?
Don't know whether Phil Mickelson's a Travis Scott fan, but...
Huge.
Yeah, huge maybe. Yeah, he put a load of money on him turning up somewhere. But I don't know, but I like the idea that Nike is starting to pull some cultural strings and bring it back into golf.
I'll tell you what I quite like. Having the kind of barrier of entry kind of enforces a bit of like cultural credibility. Like say, you know, for example, if you see someone wearing a Ramones shirt and say name two songs and they can't, this is like, you want some golf shoes, do you play golf? Oh yeah. Of course, go on then, drive it. So there's a little bit of kind of go on then, prove it, which
I'd like to see more. I don't know, more stores or more things doing that to get on the ballot rather than just potluck. Although that is kind of, that's a bit shit because you're kind of guardrailing culture a little bit, but I kind of like it. It's
fairly limited numbers as well. So like,
yeah, they've only got like 200 or something like that.
It's not dissimilar to Cortez.
They did that
crossbar challenge to win the... Actually, it was Nike again, wasn't it?
It was.
Thinking about it.
It was the collaboration
Air Maxes. Mm. So it's fairly similar to that.
So the entry mechanic, you've got to enter a raffle draw. That wins you one of the 72 spots to the in-store event. And then at the event, probably in front of another 71 people.
Yeah, it's people heckling you as well.
You've got to hit the ball.
That's the other thing. So I follow this page, and I'm not like a massive golf follower, but like particularly now with what LIV Golf are doing, I think golf's being kind of slightly modernised. Like there's this Instagram page called like Country Club Adjacent, and they had like a sort of drive-off at a LIV Golf event, which was like in collaboration with these. And it's like... it's people absolutely twatting balls then getting beers thrown at them, which is like, again, it's like very much not the kind of hoity-toity what golf is meant to stand for. So I feel like it's kind of speaking to that market of kind of like American bros who have now like, they probably don't want to play football anymore because it's a bit too rough on the old spine and they get it, but they still like want to like go out and smoke cigars and drink beers. So it's kind of for them.
But you can also see how golf can sidle up to like Casablanca Tennis Club as a brand and Rochambeau and Amy Leondor, right? It's a very easy transition into that sort of country club irony of like, you know, golf as being this sort of exclusive thing. Smashing a dollop of style with the right player on the circuit or something like that. And you start to create quite an interesting little niche brand.
Yeah, and there's that nice kind of, because where it has quite a sort of like, I don't know, stuffy connotations, like, getting the juxtaposition of like the inmates having taken over the asylum sort of thing, I guess immediately it drags it into a much more contemporary context than the PGA Tour or whatever.
We need to start a brand that is like the golf version of the Casablanca Tennis Club. Let's do it.
Next steps, guys. Next step, write that down.
Yeah. ASMR.
Okay, cool. Well, James, do you know what's making it in?
I'm not sure, actually. I did quite like Matt's golf story, but I'm going to have to chew it over.
Okay, cool. If people want to read, where they're going to find
it. So I realised I completely dismissed Steph's story then. It was all right as well.
It was all right.
And where are people going to find the Cool Shit newsletter?
Well, Really Cool Shit will find them. But if they want to find it, then it's zachagency.com/cool-sht.
Thank you. And thanks, Steph.
Thank you.
Congrats on your first podcast.
Thank you.
And also your first month at Zach, roughly. Woo. Well done.
Oh my God, it is.
You made it. This is a great way to celebrate. And thanks, Matt. You'll be back.
I'll be back.